Fungi can be food, like mushrooms, and a number of them can be important to making food, or they can be destructive to food, like wheat crust. We thought we would find out about the world of mushrooms and other fungi, and for this week's Food Fridays, Please Explain, and we are joined by Eugenia Bone, president of the New York Mycological Society and author of Mycophilia, Revelations from the Weird World of Mushrooms. It's published by Rodale. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
And we are inviting our listeners to join in. Give us a call with your mushroom questions at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook and Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Can you tell us about how mushrooms grow first? Let's start with the spores. Are they like seeds?
Kind of. I mean, they're much lighter than seeds. They're so light that they float all over the atmosphere. In fact, with every breath you take, you breathe in 1 to 10 fungal spores. So the spores land on something that that type of fungus likes to eat, because fungi live in their food. And if it is lucky enough to land on the type of food that it likes to eat, and the temperature and circumstances are right, then it germinates.
And the food it likes to eat is usually stuff that nobody else likes to eat?
Well, fungi likes to eat everything. They
are the goats of the vegetable world.
They will take.
Are they vegetable?
No,
they're animal.
They are one of the three complex kingdoms in nature: animals, plants, and fungi. In fact, fungi are more closely related to animals than they are to plants, which is odd, but true.
Well, they're everywhere, and yet you only see patches of mushrooms. They crop up here, they crop up there, but not everywhere. Why is that?
Well, that's just the fruiting body. The mushroom is like the fruit or the flower. It's the organ of sexual reproduction for the fungus. But fungus is in everything. I mean, it's a microscopic critter. It can be tiny and single-celled like yeasts, or it could be filamentous. In fact, a filamentous fungus, you know, this fungus is kind of made of lots of long threads of cells, is the biggest living organism on Earth.
The yeast is fungus?
Yeah.
And yeast is everywhere.
Yeah.
If you just put flour and water together, you're going to wind up with a yeast, wild yeast attacking it, but not other fungus? Not other fungi?
Not other fungi.
Do they also go into that mixture that I think of as a wild yeast mixture?
Well, there's a lot of different species of yeast, which is one of the things that makes winemakers crazy, because, you know, they'll end up with all of these different fermenters in their wine that they didn't put in there intentionally. Fungi do all kinds of different jobs in food and nature. I mean, molds are in cheeses, and people dig kombucha, which ferments tea,
Yeah, let's talk about some of the other terms. Mycelium, you mentioned there's a fungus that's over 2,000 acres big in Oregon.
Yeah.
Is that because of the mycelium?
Yes. So you have to think of the fungus as like this big, gigantic, thready, well, there's a lot of different fungi, of course. There's the yeasts, which are tiny. But of the big ones, there are these big, thready, absorptive bodies. They grow into soil, or they grow into plant matter that they break down, and they're one of the rotters. I mean, if it weren't for the decaying fungi, we would be living under miles of plant debris.
Mm-hmm. So they're eating it and growing with it.
And they don't grow old. They don't. They don't biologically age. These type of fungi, they can die. You can kill them, but they don't. They don't age.
But you can't plant them, can you? Could I create a chanterelle garden or a morel garden?
You can definitely cultivate mushrooms. I mean, we eat lots of cultivated
mushrooms.
Yeah, but
those are those white button mushrooms that have no taste.
Well, but we also cultivate maitake, the hen of the woods, which is very tasty. It grows wild, but also it's cultivated. Any fungus that is that is a saprobe, that is a decayer, that eats dead and dying things, can be grown if you feed it its preferred food. But the mushrooms that can't be grown, or that are not worth growing financially, that are cheaper to pick in the wild, are those mushrooms that are the fruiting bodies of fungi that live in a symbiotic relationship with plants.
So you often find them next to a tree, a certain kind of a tree.
You look for the tree to find the mushroom.
Do mushrooms work the way that the fruit of plants work? You know, the spore is sent out and eventually creates more mushrooms, more fungi?
Well, yes, kind of. I mean, it's a different kingdom, so the biology is totally unique. What happens is spore A falls into the ground and germinates. Spore B, same species.
It digests food. How does it digest food?
Well, the fungi are so tiny, they don't have stomachs. They actually they spill out enzymes which break down the food and then they absorb the food. So if you were a fungus, you'd be lying on a big steak and you would seep out your digestive fluids, break down the steak, and then absorb the steak's nutrients through your skin. And then you'd grow a little bit bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And you continue growing until you absorb the whole steak, and then you'd have to get out of there. So you'd produce a fruiting body, a mushroom, to move your spores to hopefully another steak nearby.
And they seem to appear overnight.
Yes, because mushrooms, the ones that we're talking about, don't actually grow. They expand. They're like sponges. They just fill up with water. That's why you see them after a rain.
But then they look like plants. Do they need sunlight?
No, mushrooms don't need sunlight to grow. They don't make their own food. They're closer to animals because one of the reasons why is because they actually find their food and create enzymes to digest it.
But they do need water.
Yes.
So if there's a drought, is that one of the rare times when the mycelium will die?
Well, it just depends on the species. I mean, there's a desert truffles that grow in sand dunes.
Now, some fungi are poisonous. Do we have any idea why some are not and some are?
No, that's a big mystery. It might have something to do with an evolutionary adaptation to ward off predators. You know, why does the mushroom have the poison? Well, maybe it doesn't want a cow to eat it. Do we really know? No.
And there are some fungi that are totally destructive and actually can be causes of crop failure and famine.
Yes. In fact, fungi are the primary cause of plant disease in nature.
Including all sorts of things like wheat rust.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are some that are more problematic. One person's bad fungus can be the next one's money crop, like American farmers calling a thing that grows on corn smut, and Mexican farmers calling it huilacoche and saying, good, I have some huilacoche. I'm making big money now.
Yeah, it's cool. It's like tastes like a combination of corn and mushrooms.
Have American farmers come to recognize that there's a reason that it's called a Mexican truffle?
Well, some farmers are actually inoculating their corn with the germinated spore of this mold, this pathogen, but it's a niche crop.
What about the rusts? How do they attack something like wheat?
Well, they're a plant pathogen. Some different pathogens will take out plants in different ways, but one of the ways in nature, you know, it's not just killing the plant, but if you kill the plant's ability, if the fungi kills the plant's ability to reproduce, that's the same as being dead as far as nature is concerned. And then they spread. They spread by sending out spores, and those spores float into the next field and so on and so on.
And then they kill off the wheat, or they ruin the wheat.
Or they make the wheat unable to reproduce, you know.
Well, let's talk about some of the more valuable culinary mushrooms, morels, chanterelles, porcini, truffles, matsukake. When we see them in the store or on menus, does that mean that most of them have been gathered in the wild?
You know, that's the incredible thing. If you know what type of fungus the mushroom grew from, then you'll know whether it was picked wild or cultivated. So a lot of the mushrooms you see on a menu will say wild mushrooms, but if they're oyster mushrooms, shiitake mushrooms, maitake, then they're not going to be wild. The wild mushrooms are the ones that grow in these symbiotic relationships with trees. So that's like morels, chanterelles, all the more expensive
ones. Truffles.
And truffles.
Can we tell the difference by taste?
The difference...
Are the wild plants taste better?
Yes, you can tell. I mean, it's subtle, but I think that the wild versions, like let's say Hen of the Woods, which grows here in New York City, and it's also cultivated. You see it in the market all the time. The wild versions have a kind of more complexity of flavor. But remember, the fungus itself is an absorptive body, so it's taking up minerals and all kinds of groovy things in the soil, and that's being reflected in the fruit, just like in the vinifera, you know, in the wine grape. It's a very similar situation.
You brought some candy cap mushrooms with you. Where do they grow?
Oh, they're from Northern California. And I'm going to open this pack so you can just have a sniff. They're very unique. They taste like...
oh, my.
Yeah.
Smells very peppery.
Yeah, and these are dried, and when they're rehydrated, they have a really strong maple flavor, and they're used in sweet applications. And what's so cool about them is that when you handle them, your skin smells like maple afterwards. And
oh,
then,
yeah. I can smell it on my thumb.
And if you eat them and then you exercise, your sweat will have this maple flavor. I mean, it's all the way down the line when you make love. You know, yes.
Could you give me a bushel of them?
Yes, here you go.
Mycophilia is Eugenia Bone's book, Revelations from the Weird World of Mushrooms. It is published by Rodale. And we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Let's take a call from Andrea. Hi, Andrea. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm so glad you guys are talking about this. I'm just in the process of ordering some shiitake spores from an amazing mushroom company in Maine, from which I've been ordering dried mushrooms for years for stews and things in the winter. They're just they just impart such a deep, deep flavor to everything that you cook with. So what I'd like to know is some more about how I can install these spores. Can you suggest for the shiitake what kind of wood I should use and how I place that wood in my garden in Connecticut?
The thing to try to do is you buy little wooden plugs that have been colonized with the mycelium.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hammer those plugs, I think it's into pine, and you drill little holes in the pine logs, you hammer in the plugs, you cover up the plug holes with a little bit of wax. It's really simple to do, and then you wet the log. So then what happens is that mycelium starts to grow into the log, and it'll just colonize the whole log. And once the mycelium gets the feeling that they're at the end of its space, it'll fruit mushrooms. And it'll continue to do that as long as there's nutrition to be gleaned from that log.
Okay.
So do I hang the logs, or what do I do with the logs?
A lot of people kind of stack them sort of log cabin style.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Now, you can't do that with truffles. You can't do that with chanterelles. Why did they resist being cultivated?
Because they don't eat dead things. What those fungi do is they are soil fungi, so they're eating... you know, good stuff in the soil, gathering minerals and water and nitrogen and all that, and they're exchanging those nutrients with sugar with the tree. So the tree gives the fungus sugar that it makes as a result of photosynthesis, and the fungus gives the tree these nutrients from the soil. And in fact, there's many trees that won't. They will suffer from malnutrition if they don't have their fungus living on their roots. It's a key part of their health.
Truffles pop up in various parts of the world, but not next to each other. You have some in France. You have some in Italy. There are some in the American Northwest. Are they pretty much the same thing?
No, there's like at least 60 species. They're all over. We've got DNA analysis done recently showing us there's two species in Central Park.
Of truffles?
Yeah, yeah. It's just an underground mushroom.
So can I get a dog or a pig and find them in Central Park?
Well, here's the thing. There might be 60 species of truffle, but there's only a few that you want to eat.
Especially white ones from northern Italy.
Well, yes. And that kind of truffle is very unique. I mean, there's all these other kinds that attract other critters in nature. Because the way the truffle gets its spore out and about is the fungus produces the fruiting body, which is the truffle. It's underground. How's it going to get those spores into the air? Well, it produces these aromatic compounds, which attracts animals. The animals dig up the truffle, and they either eat it or they spread the spore by just exposing it to air. The truffles we like have evolved to attract swine as its symbiotic partner, you know, as its partner in digging it up.
Although more recently people have been training dogs to find them because the pigs want to eat them and the dogs will just find them and
right.
let you eat them.
Right. The dogs are definitely probably, well, in Italian say you look silly hunting with a pig. But from the truffle's perspective, it doesn't matter. They're trying to attract wild swine rather than wild dogs.
Next on the line is Harry from Queens. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I hope this isn't like a too vague question, but there is a very common mushroom in Queens and Brooklyn. Like when you have rotting wood or use wood chips in your garden, and it's a white mushroom. I was just wondering whether that is an edible or poisonous mushroom, if you know.
It's hard to know, isn't it? Some mushrooms look exactly alike, and some are perfectly edible, and the others are poisonous?
Oh, yeah. It's really, I mean, it's not hard to know if you know.
Do you have a microscope?
In some cases, but that's just not enough information, you know, to identify it. What you should do is if you're really interested in mushrooms, join the New York Mycological Society. We have ID sessions every Monday night during the season. You bring your mushrooms in and we'll let you know if you can eat them or, you know, any.
And how do you determine that? Just by looking at them?
We've got a bunch of people who are really expert at identifying mushrooms, and they know historically what is edible and what's not.
If I find a mushroom patch that is edible and I pick a lot of them, how do I store them?
Well, mushrooms dry very well. You know, they're like animals. They have a lot of protein in them. They love to be dried. And in some cases, some mushrooms are even better dried. So that's probably the number one way. But you can also pickle them, and you can can them in a pressure canner.
I was told that in some cases you can just saute them lightly in butter.
and then eat them right away.
or stick them in the freezer, and they'll last for a long, long time.
Yeah, they'll hold well in the freezer, depending on the mushroom. Some are just too delicate for that. You know, it's like the more sort of robust or ideal for freezing.
George is on the line. Hi, George.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You mentioned the maitake mushroom, and a family member is going through chemotherapy, and we heard anecdotally that the maitake mushroom does help with symptoms of chemotherapy. Is this true? And if it is, what's the best delivery system, like a dry extract or tea from dry mushroom? If you could be of any help, that would be great.
Mushrooms or extracts of mushrooms are used in traditional Chinese medicine, in some cases as adjunct therapy for people who are undergoing chemo, because it helps boost their immune system. It sort of helps kick in those killer T cells. Those mushrooms are extracts of shiitake and of turkey tail. Both are considered very effective, and they're undergoing studies here in the United States. Maitake's effectiveness is anecdotal. There are supplemental pills that you can take, but there is no protocol for how to take them. Everyone's cancer is different. It's a very tricky thing. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't.
But fungus played an important role in medicine. Isn't penicillin and all of the things that followed, aren't they all forms of fungus?
Penicillin is, yeah. The fungi will produce antibiotics in order to fight off bacteria who might be competing with the fungus for food.
Are mushrooms especially nutritious? Are they rich in vitamins and minerals?
They are nutritious, but you have to remember they're mostly water. So what there is of them is nutritious. In fact, they're better for type of they produce better type of protein than beans. So they're really important for vegans and vegetarians, and they are the only non-animal source of vitamin D besides sunshine. So if you have to avoid sunshine for whatever reason, then you can actually eat irradiated mushrooms, which is a product that's available, even irradiated mushroom powder, and you'll get a serious dose of vitamin D, which is very helpful.
They also grill quite well, the large ones.
They do. There's a lot of ways to cook them. Any way you cook a steak, you can cook a mushroom.
Stephen from the Bronx, how are you on the air?
Thank you very much. I'm new to mushroom hunting, and this weekend my wife and I are going into an apple orchard to hunt for morels. And I've read that some apple orchards had been sprayed with lead arsenate in the past, and that it does not degrade in the soil. I'm wondering, are there any implications for eating morels that have been grown in this kind of a situation?
Yes, you know that I know that paper that you're talking about, and it sounds pretty factual to me, and I think it's true. So you just don't want to eat large amounts of mushrooms picked in apple orchards where even in the 60s they were still spraying lead arsenate.
Because mushrooms wind up eating the garbage, so they're going to be eating all of the things that that are poisonous.
You know what
degree.
They do? They bioaccumulate metals. That's what happens. It's just this weird trick that they do. So sometimes the mushroom will reflect a greater amount of a heavy metal than the surrounding soil.
Some listeners are asking about other things like wood ears, the half moon shaped fungus that grow on tree trunks.
Yeah.
Are they edible?
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, be sure that what you're collecting is a wood ear. That's all. But they are. They're not so tasty, but the Chinese love them. They have a kind of mucusy quality. They've been also used medicinally for sore throats.
And puffballs? The white
spherical. Puffballs are edible. I don't think they're that delicious. They're kind of like an unsweet marshmallow. But they really, I treat them like matzo. You know, sort of it expands your scrambled eggs.
Some mushrooms have psychotropic effects. Is that a form of poison?
It is. It's just a kind of poison that we actually seek out.
So psilocybin, for example, that comes out of mushrooms. Why do they have that kind of effect on
I know, it's just like
the human
poison.
Brain.
It's weird, right? Maybe it's to keep cattle from eating it. But the way it works, that's why they have the poison. But the way it works in our bodies is you eat the mushroom, which has psilocybin in it. The psilocybin metabolizes into something called psilocin. And psilocin is molecularly very similar to serotonin. So the psilocin basically locks in the serotonin receptors of your brain. It's sort of like you've got an alien software that you're putting it that works in your computer. And that's why you have all of these enhanced experiences. It's really a result of serotonin receptor stimulation.
We have very little time, but a number of listeners have wondered about allergies. Can some people be allergic to families of mushrooms like portobellos?
Allergies are mysterious in general. Large amounts of spores, mold spores in a basement or something, can give you an allergic reaction.
Eugenia Bone will be speaking at the New York Public Library at 455 Fifth Avenue Tuesday, May 7th at 6:30 p.m. For more information on that, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. Her book, Mycophilia, is published by Rodale. Thank you so much for being on today's Please Explain.
Thank you.